A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He and Hannah just moved into a new rental in Jerusalem, and the central HVAC is a disaster. The living room has 6 supply vents. The bedroom has one. First night in, the bedroom measured 28 degrees. The landlord sent a technician who said the system itself isn't defective. The duct layout is just badly designed. And his solution was to partially block some of the living room vents to force more air toward the bedroom. Even mentioned cardboard as a temporary fix. Daniel's asking whether this is legitimate, whether it risks damaging the equipment, and what a renter should actually do.
This is the technician equivalent of just hit it with a hammer and see. But here's the thing, he's not entirely wrong. The physics of what he's describing is a real HVAC balancing technique. It's called dampering at the register.
It sounds like the kind of advice that ends with a frozen coil and a landlord who suddenly remembers your security deposit.
That's exactly the tension. Let's break down what's actually happening inside those walls. The blower in the air handler creates static pressure in the ductwork. Think of it like water pressure in a pipe. Air, like water, follows the path of least resistance. The living room has 6 vents acting as exits. The bedroom has one. The pressure drop across 6 open vents is drastically lower than the pressure drop across 1, so the vast majority of conditioned air dumps into the living room while the bedroom gets whatever's left.
The bedroom duct is basically the road less traveled, and air molecules are not poetic.
They're ruthlessly efficient. The technician's suggestion, restrict the living room vents, increases the resistance on those paths. When you do that, static pressure in the duct upstream rises, and the air starts looking harder at alternative exits, including that lonely bedroom duct. This is exactly how manual balancing dampers work in commercial systems, just executed at a different point in the airflow path.
Except commercial balancing dampers are designed to be adjusted. Cardboard is designed to be a box.
And that's where we need to talk about what happens when you start closing things off. Allison Bales at Energy Vanguard has written extensively about this. Closing supply registers increases duct static pressure, which reduces total system airflow, measured in cubic feet per minute or CFM. The blower has a fan curve. As static pressure goes up, CFM comes down. It's not linear, but it's predictable.
You're not just redirecting air. You're making less of it.
A typical 3-ton residential system designed for about 0.5 inches of static pressure might deliver 1200 CFM. Crank that static pressure up to 0.8 inches by blocking vents, and you're down to roughly 1,000 CFM, a 17% reduction in total airflow.
Which means the bedroom gets a larger slice of a smaller pie.
That's the cruel math here. If the system was delivering 1,000 CFM total, the living room with 6 vents was getting maybe 85 CFM per vent, about 510 CFM total, and the bedroom was getting 85 CFM. Block 2 living room vents, and the living room drops to 340 CFM. But total system CFM also drops, maybe to 850. The bedroom now gets roughly 120 CFM. That's a gain of 35 CFM. Not nothing, but not enough to drop a bedroom from 28 degrees to 24.
You're making the living room less comfortable to make the bedroom marginally less uncomfortable. That's not a solution. That's a redistribution of misery.
It gets worse. ACHR News published a piece on this that's become one of the go-to references in the industry. They're finding closing more than 20 to 30% of supply registers can cause the evaporator coil to get too cold and potentially freeze up.
Why does restricting airflow freeze the coil? Walk me through the actual mechanism there.
The evaporator coil needs a certain amount of warm return air passing over it to keep its temperature above freezing. Think of the coil as a heat exchanger. The refrigerant inside is cold, expanding, and it's absorbing heat from the air blowing across the coil fins. That heat absorption is what keeps the coil temperature stable. When you reduce total airflow through the system, less warm air crosses the coil. The refrigerant inside keeps expanding and getting cold, but there's not enough heat being absorbed from the air side. The coil temperature drops below 0 Celsius, condensation on the coil freezes, and now you've got a block of ice where your air conditioner used to be.
It's like a car radiator that's not getting enough airflow, except instead of overheating, it freezes solid.
That's exactly the right analogy, just inverted. A car radiator dumps heat into the air. An evaporator coil pulls heat out of it. In both cases, you need sufficient airflow for the heat exchange to happen. Starve either one, and the system fails, just in opposite thermal directions.
In Daniel's apartment, with 7 total supply vents, blocking just 2 living room vents is 28% of all vents. 3 vents is 42%. Both above that 20 to 30% danger threshold.
That's the number that should make any renter pause. The technician's suggestion to block some, vents, if some, means 3, puts you squarely in coil freezing territory. Now, the blower motor itself is a separate concern. Modern systems use ECM blowers, electronically commutated motors, which are more sophisticated than the older PSC motors. ECM blowers sense rising static pressure and ramp up to try to maintain CFM. They're more tolerant of restriction, but they consume more energy doing it, and sustained operation against high static pressure shortens motor life. Older PSC motors just move less air and can overheat.
With an ECM blower, you might not kill the motor immediately, but you're running it harder and hotter for longer. With a PSC motor, you're rolling dice.
Most renters have no idea what kind of blower motor their apartment system uses, nor should they have to. That information is usually buried on a nameplate inside the air handler, which in a rental is probably behind a locked access panel or in a utility closet you don't have a key for.
There's also the noise problem. Higher static pressure means higher air velocity through whatever vents remain open. That single bedroom vent is going to start whistling.
The sound of air being forced through an undersized opening at higher velocity. It's not subtle. And then there's the efficiency hit. The system's CR rating, its seasonal energy efficiency ratio, assumes designed airflow. Drop CFM by 15 to 20%, and your sensible cooling capacity drops disproportionately. The system runs longer to achieve the same temperature drop, consuming more energy per degree of cooling, which means a higher electric bill for Daniel, and the bedroom still might not reach a comfortable temperature.
The technician's solution trades one problem for 4. Reduced total cooling, potential coil freeze, motor strain and noise, and the bedroom gains maybe 35 CFM. That's not a trade, that's a net loss.
Here's where I want to be fair to the technician. He's operating under renter constraints. He can't tear open walls and install zoning dampers. He can't redesign the duct layout. A proper zoning system with motorized dampers and a zone control panel would cost $1,500 to $3,000 and require duct modification. That's not happening in a rental. Manual balancing dampers installed in the ductwork near the trunk line would be the professional solution, but that requires access to the ductwork, which in most Jerusalem apartments means opening ceilings.
He's offering the poor man's zoning. And the question is whether the poor man's zoning is better than nothing, or worse.
It can be better than nothing if you stay within safe limits. The 20% rule is your boundary. In this apartment with 7 vents, that means you can fully close 1 vent or partially close 2. That's it. Beyond that, you're in the danger zone.
Let's talk about the specific products here, because Daniel asked about adjustable directional grills versus blocking. Are those the same thing?
No, and this is a common misconception. Directional grills have adjustable louvers that change the direction of the air discharge. You can angle the airflow left, right, up, down. They don't restrict the volume of air passing through. They solve problems like draftiness, hot spots near the ceiling, or stratification where cold air pools at floor level. They help mix room air better, but they don't force more air to the bedroom. For that, you need a dampening grill, a register with a built-in damper that actually restricts the opening.
The technician suggesting directional grills as a solution to an airflow distribution problem is like suggesting you rearrange the furniture to fix a leaky roof.
It's addressing a different problem entirely. What Daniel needs are adjustable registers with an integrated damper. Those have a little lever on the side that opens and closes metal blades behind the grill face. You can swap out the existing fixed grills for these in minutes with a screwdriver. They cost maybe $15 to $25 each, fully reversible, no damage to the apartment.
The cardboard suggestion.
As a diagnostic tool, it's not the worst idea. Before you spend money on adjustable registers, you can tape a piece of cardboard inside a vent to test the effect. Run the system for an hour, measure the bedroom temperature, see if it moves. But as a permanent solution, cardboard is terrible. It restricts airflow unpredictably, it can shed fibers and particles into the ductwork, and if it gets damp from condensation, it becomes a mold substrate.
The technician basically suggested the HVAC equivalent of, let's see what this button does.
Use a magnetic vent cover instead. They're sheets of flexible magnetic material you can cut to size. They stick to metal grills, they're completely removable, and they don't shed. $10 for a pack of them. If the grills are plastic, you can use rigid plastic sheets cut to size and taped in place. But magnetic covers are cleaner.
What about products that actively pull more air through the bedroom duct? I've seen those register booster fans.
These are surprisingly effective for the price. A register booster fan is a small fan unit that mounts over an existing supply vent. It plugs into a wall outlet and actively pulls air through that specific duct. They typically cost $30 to $50 and can increase airflow through a vent by 50 to 80%. For a bedroom with a single undersized vent, this might be the single most impactful renter-friendly fix.
You're adding a booster fan at the endpoint rather than trying to force more air through the whole system.
It's pulling, not pushing. The booster fan creates a local low-pressure zone at the bedroom register, which draws more air through that duct without significantly increasing static pressure in the rest of the system. It's not a perfect solution. It adds a small amount of noise and consumes electricity, but it directly addresses the symptom, not enough air reaching the bedroom.
I'm curious about the physics of that. How does pulling at the endpoint not create the same static pressure problems upstream?
The difference is where the pressure drop happens. When you restrict vents at the living room end, you're increasing pressure throughout the entire duct system all the way back to the blower. The blower now has to work against that higher pressure. But a booster fan at the bedroom register creates a localized low-pressure zone right at that vent. The rest of the duct system still sees essentially normal pressure conditions. The booster is doing the work of overcoming the resistance in that specific branch duct, rather than asking the central blower to push harder against a system-wide restriction.
It's the difference between putting a kink in the garden hose versus putting a small pump at the sprinkler head.
The kink raises pressure everywhere upstream. The pump just moves more water through its specific outlet.
What about the return air situation? In most Israeli apartments, the return vent is in the living room near the thermostat. If you're cooling the living room less by restricting its supply vents, the return air is warmer, and the thermostat keeps cooling for cooling.
This is the hidden trap in the whole strategy. The thermostat is almost certainly in the living room. If you restrict living room supply vents, the living room warms up. The thermostat senses that and runs the system longer. The bedroom gets more total runtime, which helps. But the living room might never satisfy the thermostat, so the system runs continuously. Meanwhile, the bedroom's single vent is still the bottleneck. You're running the compressor for hours to squeeze a trickle of air through that one duct.
The system becomes a full-time employee with part-time results.
Your electric bill reflects full-time employment. This is why, if the bedroom is still above 26 degrees after reasonable adjustments, the central system is fundamentally undersized for the bedroom's cooling load. At that point, no amount of vent juggling will fix it.
Which brings us to the wildcard solution. Just bypass the central system entirely for the bedroom.
A portable AC unit or a window unit. In Jerusalem's climate, a 9,000 BTU window unit costs around $300. It solves the problem definitively. It's not elegant, it's not integrated, and it adds a separate appliance to manage. But for a renter who can't modify ductwork, it's the only solution that guarantees a cool bedroom.
There's an argument that the landlord should pay for it. Israeli rental law requires the apartment to be habitable. A bedroom at 28 degrees with a central AC system that can't cool it. That's arguably a habitability issue.
Especially when the technician has already documented that the duct layout is poorly designed. That's not tenant negligence, that's a design defect. A reasonable landlord would install a mini split in the bedroom as a permanent fix. That's a $1,000 to $2,000 investment that permanently solves the problem and adds value to the property.
We both know how landlord negotiations go in Jerusalem.
Measure temperatures in every room at different times of day. Get the technician's diagnosis in writing. Send it to the landlord with a polite request for a mini split or a RID reduction to cover the cost of a portable unit. The law is on the tenant's side here. The fair rental law requires the landlord to maintain the property in a habitable condition.
Having the technician's own report saying the duct design is flawed, that's gold. You're not just a complaining tenant. You've got their own expert saying the system can't do the job.
That completely changes the dynamic. Now it's not a he said, she said about whether the AC works. It's a documented design deficiency. Any reasonable judge or arbitrator would look at that and ask the landlord why they haven't fixed it.
Let's pull this into a concrete plan. If I'm Daniel, what do I actually do tomorrow?
Step 1. Measure your baseline. Get a $10 digital thermometer and record the bedroom temperature at, say, 10 p.m., 2 a.m., and 6 a.m. Do the same for the living room. You need to know the actual temperature differential before you change anything.
Otherwise, you're just guessing whether your fixes worked.
Step 2. Install an adjustable dampening register in the bedroom, one with the damper fully open. You want zero restriction on the bedroom side. Then partially close two living room registers using either magnetic covers or by swapping in adjustable registers and closing the damper about 50%. Do not close more than two vents, and do not close any vent fully.
This keeps you under the 20% threshold.
Step 3. Add a register booster fan to the bedroom vent. This is the force multiplier. Between the partial restriction in the living room and the active pull in the bedroom, you're attacking the problem from both sides.
Step 4. Measure again for 24 hours. If the bedroom drops from 28 to 24 or 25, you've won. If it's still above 26, you need the nuclear option.
Step 5. Buy a portable or window AC unit for the bedroom. At this point, you've exhausted what's possible with the central system without modifying ductwork. Send the receipt to the landlord with a letter explaining that the central system cannot adequately cool the bedroom, as documented by their own technician, and request reimbursement.
Throughout all of this, monitor the outdoor unit's refrigerant lines. If you see ice forming on the larger insulated pipe, open all vents immediately. That's the evaporator coil freezing, and it means you've restricted too much airflow.
Ice on the refrigerant line is the canary in the coal mine. Once the coil freezes, the system stops cooling entirely and you're looking at a service call to thaw it out. In a worst case, liquid refrigerant can slug back to the compressor and cause catastrophic damage.
Slugging? That's when liquid refrigerant enters the compressor instead of vapor, right?
Compressors are designed to compress gas, not liquid. Liquid refrigerant is incompressible, so when the piston or scroll tries to compress it, you get hydraulic forces that can shatter valves, bend connecting rods, or blow out the compressor entirely. That's a multi-$1,000 repair. All because someone blocked a few vents with cardboard.
To directly answer Daniel's questions. 1. Yes, partially restricting supply vents is a legitimate balancing technique, but only within strict limits. 2. The risks are real. Coil freezing, reduced total CFM, increased energy consumption, motor strain, and noise. 3. It's acceptable when you stay under the 20% threshold and monitor for ice. It should be avoided entirely if the system already has marginal airflow or if you can't monitor it. 4. Adjustable directional grills are not a substitute for dampening grills. They solve a different problem. 5. Magnetic vent covers, adjustable dampening registers, and register booster fans are all renter-friendly and reversible. 6. The order of effectiveness is booster fan plus partial restriction, then portable AC as the definitive solution.
One thing I want to emphasize, the technician was right that the system isn't defective in the mechanical sense. The blower works, the compressor works, the refrigerant charge is probably fine. But a system that can't cool a bedroom in a Jerusalem summer is defective by design. Functioning equipment and functional cooling are not the same thing.
That's the distinction that gets lost in rental disputes. The landlord hears the AC works and thinks the conversation is over. But working equipment delivering inadequate cooling because of bad duct design is still a landlord problem, not a tenant problem.
We're going to see more of this. Older Jerusalem buildings are getting central HVAC retrofits, and the duct layouts are often afterthoughts, whatever fits in the existing ceiling spaces with no real engineering for balanced airflow. The result is exactly what Daniel's experiencing. One room gets arctic blast, another gets a gentle suggestion of coolness.
The building equivalent of a car with steering that only turns left.
Renters need to know that they have options beyond just accepting it. The 20% rule gives you a safe boundary for DIY balancing. Register booster fans give you active airflow where you need it. And the law gives you leverage if the system fundamentally can't do the job.
The technician's cardboard suggestion was the right instinct applied with the wrong material and insufficient caution. He identified the balancing problem correctly, but didn't explain the risks or the limits.
Which is why Daniel's instinct to ask for a second opinion was spot on. The answer to, should I block my vents, is yes, carefully, with the right products, and only up to a point.
If careful doesn't cut it, buy the window unit and send the bill.
With a smile.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1720s, dyers in the Namib Desert used a technique involving fermented goat urine and crushed acacia bark to produce a specific shade of reddish brown, and a single batch typically required the urine of 14 goats steeped for 9 days.
I have so many questions, and I want exactly none of them answered.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you're a renter dealing with uneven HVAC, measure your temperatures, document everything, and remember the 20% rule. Send your own prompts to the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.